tell listeners what the word pommy means.
Well, it's debatable, but originally it was supposed to be Prisoner of Her Majesty. It was a derivation of that.
Okay.
That's going back to the 18th century or something, but
Prisoner of Mother England.
There's a number of different versions of it, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
It's basically there was another theory is it's from the phrase pommy apple. That's some sort of an apple or something.
Ah.
Sort of like, because most of the bloody they call the poms sort of like rosy cheeks, you know what I mean, I suppose, you know?
The fair skin.
Fair skin and sort of their cheeks. So that was most Aussies are the, you know, bronzed Aussies, if you know what I mean, you know?
Yeah, I know you guys, kind of like us, kind of fought pretty hard to break free from England. And, so...
Yeah, well, not quite as hard as yous. They had this thing here, that they didn't really have any major armed uprisings here, except what they call the Eureka Rebellion. That was in the 1850s, during the gold rushes. That was mainly about gold licensing fees and representation in Parliament and that sort of stuff, because originally the situation was that the only people who were allowed in Parliament were what they called squatters. That's people who own large parcels of land and had a certain amount of income per year, and basically they were the only ones who were allowed to vote and the only ones who were allowed to be represented in Parliament, be sitting members.
Yeah. I see.
So, yeah.
Well, you know...
Go ahead. Conflict in this country has been around... trade unions, you know what I mean?
I see.
Trade union movement was very big here over 100 years. It's dying out a bit now, but over a 100-year period, there was a lot of them. Australia was the first country to bring in the 8-hour day, you see?
Oh, right.
Yeah. And enfranchised women for the vote. I mean, whether that was a mistake or not, who knows? But, I mean, and various other things like that, working conditions and all that sort of stuff, industrial relations. We were the first country to have an industrial relations tribunal. So, I suppose you could say, I mean, up until, like 30 or 40 years ago, I mean, so socialism was pretty big here, like the Communist Party here was fairly big too, but you could live with that. I mean, that's not going to destroy a country. What's going to destroy a country is race mixing.
Yeah.
You know? Not whether you're communist or bloody socialist or bloody Califumpian or whatever the bloody hell you are. And
I mean, you know, even China survived communism. You know, you can argue that. I mean, you can.
Yeah.
No one wants communism, but you know, China would not survive. You know, mixing with Africans, right?
No.
I mean, you know, I don't care that much for China, but you know, they're nice people. But they survived communism, and you know, you can't survive the nigger. You know, it's just, I mean, you can't come out. You know, I mean, hey, folks,
chance,
I've got...
more chance of surviving than a blast, mate.
I wanted to introduce James Hawthorne. He's from Great Britain, and I think he's a real, real swell fella. I'm so glad to have him on the call, and I love talking with him. And so we're on the call now with James Hawthorne, Jimbo, and Pendant from Oregon. And
Washington.
Go ahead.
Washington.
Oh, Washington, excuse me. See, it gets crazy this fourth hour, and anything can happen.
I should say, Jeff, and thanks for inviting me on the program again, I should say good evening to our American listeners, good afternoon to our Australian listeners, and good early morning to all our European listeners.
And I'm sure there are people from everywhere listening right now.
And if you can work your head around these time zones, you're a better man than I am.
Yeah. I was expecting Jimbo about 2 hours later, and then this is no fault of Jimbo. He's a fine fella, and it's just these time zones, and he showed up here at the 9 p.m. hour, and so I don't know who's what caused that, but it doesn't really matter because we're all here together. And but James, have you made it down to Australia?
I have family in Melbourne, Australia. I have my mum's sister's family in Australia. I have to this day, I haven't gone there yet, but I plan to within the next 5 years.
Yeah. Whereabouts in Melbourne, mate?
I'm not really sure, Jimbo, to tell you the truth. that sounds terrible, but it's somewhere in Melbourne. That's as far as I know, you know, mate?
Yes. Well, yeah, well, Melbourne's a fairly big sort of, fairly spread out, so... it sort of goes like 24 miles one way and 24 miles the other way. So
here's something interesting. If you can tell everyone who's tuned into the broadcast about the White Australia policy, what was that all about?
Yeah. Well, basically it was...
don't forget to speak up, Jimbo.
Right, yeah. The White Australia policy was pretty much to ensure that... immigrants to Australia were basically of European origin, and to severely limit or curtail the influx of non-Europeans, and they had various ways and means of doing that. There was something called the dictation test, which basically involved people who were non-white getting them to sort of take a test in English, and if they couldn't pass it. Sufficiently, they were out. Even if they looked like passing it, they just made the test a bit harder.
So, yeah.
And that was overturned a while back, was it not?
Oh, yeah, back in the 1970s. It's actually, the legislation was only officially repealed about 25 years ago, but it hadn't been enforced since basically the late 1960s. But because I don't know, you probably remember the Snowy Mountain Scheme, would you? You probably heard of that, have you?
Yeah.
What was this?
The Snowy Mountain Scheme, Snowy Mountain Hydroelectric Scheme. It's a.
You know, I know something about that.
Yeah.
I forgot what that was about, though. But
well, it was basically they dammed the Snowy River in southern New South Wales, central southern New South Wales, and northern. Victoria to supply hydroelectricity to New South Wales and Victoria as emergency backup electricity in place of coal-fired power stations, which they didn't have many of back in those days. But that involved hundreds of thousands of European migrants coming into Australia, you know, over a 10-year period. So yeah. There was quite a few Dutch, like I said to you before, there's quite a few Dutch people, Germans, Brits, you know. So that.
And I was thinking, just sorry to interrupt there, Jimbo, the same people that kept David Irving out of Australia were probably the same people who were behind the change of the White Australia policy.
Yeah.
And those same people being the Jews...
Well, yeah, that's right. But with Australia, James, the situation is that the Jews are very much behind the scenes. They're not as obvious in the US. I mean, he's got them splattered all over the joint there, haven't he? You know, you turn on the bloody news, there's a Jew. You know,
yeah.
They don't call it the Jew-SA for nothing, eh?
Yeah.
But they operate very much behind the scenes here, and. But they have been. If you've heard of, there's a big law firm, big kite law firm in Melbourne called Arnold Block and Liebler, and Izzy Liebler. They were one of the major instigators in pushing multiculturalism and this racial religious vilification legislation.
What's the main Jewish organisation in Australia?
Oh, it's just B'nai B'rith.
B'nai B'rith. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, we have it here.
Yeah. Although they're not as sort of blatant here, but
Jimbo,
yeah, sorry.
It's just a matter of time. I mean, here in the United States in the 50s and 60s, the Jews were behind the scenes and they were doing their things behind the scenes. But now they're out in the open. I mean, now they don't hide themselves anymore in this country. And I'm probably the same with Great Britain as well.
Yeah, sure.
They're in front of the camera. They're it's so blatant if anyone mm-hmm. will open their eyes in this country, you know, it's visible.
I mean, when you said that bloody Iraq, the Iraq war on there, started, I mean, every second prick getting up on the TV, giving a commentary on it, official White House spokesman was a frigging kike, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it looked like to me. I mean, they even looked like kikes, you know?
You know, I don't know. Can you see American, can you watch American television down there in Australia?
We got clips, you know.
Oh yeah, well you know if you can get the you get the satellite feed for Fox Television or something and
we haven't got that ourselves. It's just too bloody expensive for you, you know. It's a lot more expensive than in the US.
Well, you'll see Irving, you'll see the Crystals, you'll see Pearl, you'll see all these people, all these Jews in the Bush administration. You'll see them all on there. And
We got this total insidious organization in Great Britain called the Board of Deputies of British Jews.
Oh boy!
It's such a cancer on the body politic in Great Britain that they are the string pullers. They are the people who call the tune in Great Britain politically, socially. They are a real huge power in Great Britain, and not a lot of British people understand this.
Yeah, not all American people understand it.
Well, you're better off. Well, I tell you what, there's virtually no bloody Aussies understand it. I mean, the average Aussie wouldn't have a clue about Jews, you know, except that there's some kind of sort of
I think Australia was kind of like America in a long time. We're both kind of a young country in some ways, and we're still kind of imagining ourselves to be something that we aren't anymore. I mean, we are not. I mean, America is not the same place that millions of people think it is. I mean, especially people my age in the 40s and 50s and older, you know, we still think of America as something that existed long ago, but it's dead. And something very awful has taken its shape, and you know, maybe Britain died earlier than we did. I don't know, but it's just, this country is just an evil monster.
I bet you, Jeff. I bet you any money that the people that turned over the White Australia policy in the 70s, as Jimbo just stated to us.
Yeah.
But B'nai B'rith were behind that, just like in 1924, the Jews were behind the immigration change in the United States, and just like in 1948, it was the Jews who were behind the immigration change in Great Britain.
Yeah. Actually, just as an historical point, the whites here, the white Gentiles, the white, well, they called themselves Christians then, they fought the Jews off in 1924. And kept basically like a White Australia policy here, and then that law was taken down in 1965.
Okay.
And that's just a minor point, but whether it was Great Britain in 48, the United States in 65, or Australia in 1970s, oh sure, it's the same gang of criminals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the White Australia policy was. Basically kiboshed by the Whitlam government. They were elected in the early 1970s. They were in office for about 3 or 4 years, but they had a lot of Jews. They did have some Jews in their were ministers, and they had Jews pushing behind the scenes. So I've only found this out myself over recent years. I mean, nobody would have known it at the time, but they did play some part in it. And they had their Jew sort of shills and Shabbos goys working for them. Mm. There was a fellow here called Grasby, Al Grasby. He was a minister of multiculturalism. He was one of the major sort of movers and shakers.
Jimbo. I remember reading a story, and it may have been from Simon Shepherd's webpage, Heretical. Maybe it wasn't, but there was this Jew down there in the Australian government. And he was a multiculturalist czar, or whatever you people call him down there, chairman or minister. And he would go around Australia and preach about, you know, race mixing and multiculturalism and all the religions are equal and all this sort of stuff. And then lo and behold, a few years later, he immigrates. He leaves Australia to live in Israel. And then when he's in Israel, he was discovered to be writing all these articles in Hebrew for the Hebrew newspapers there, saying, you know, the non-Jews are dirty and nasty. Don't marry with them. You know, don't go near them. They're filthy creatures. You know, the Goyim are nasty and they're dirty. Don't go near them and don't race mix with them. Don't marry them. Do you remember this story? Yeah.
Well, there's been a few characters like that, but if you sort of if you had a vague idea what his name might have been,
I'm sorry, I can't remember. But this this is a true story.
Might ring a bell, you know. But I mean, like the current government they've got here, there are several Jews in the government here at the moment. There's one, Vanstone. She's a bloody minister for immigration or something, I think. And there's another fellow called Hill, Robert Hill. He's a former defence minister. There's a fellow called Brandis, George Brandis.
Oh, defence minister, huh?
Yeah, and he basically got us embroiled in Iraq.
Oh, sure.
This Brandis, he's a senator. He's a minister with their portfolio or some frigging thing, I think they call him. But
oh, what's B'nai B'rith's full title down there, Jimbo?
I'm not 100% sure of that, James. It's B'nai B'rith something or other, but you don't seem so much now on the news as you used to. They used to be, they made big appearances there when they had this on Pauline Hanson, who One Nation Party came on the scene. They started making a lot of appearances on the media then. You know what I mean?
About to get,
yeah. And they were sort of on there basically every 5 minutes saying, oh, they're this, they're that, you know, they're Nazis, they're bloody racists, they're blah, 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 this, blah, 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 that, you know what I mean? And we can't, this is un-Australian, so that's the term they use, oh, she's un-Australian and all that sort of stuff, so they sort of change the terms, change the definition of words to suit themselves, you know what I mean?
I don't think a lot of people listen to this broadcast know an awful lot about Pauline Hanson and the One Nation Party, but the Jews, and it was B'nai B'rith, turned their guns on her because she came out, and I think I heard you before that you were a member of the organisation too.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Came out anti-immigration, and I bet you any bet the main organisation to go against the One Nation was B'nai B'rith of Australia. I bet you any money, obviously.
Well, they were the ones pushing it. I mean, it was the media. It's the media that sort of came down into the hardest, the mainstream media. But they were certainly behind the scenes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to the size of their organisation, they're only a tiny organisation. They've got a hell of a lot of bloody airtime on the.
Okay,
the
let's
for that, you know what I mean?
Let's back this up here for the American listeners. There was a Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party. This was kind of like had a nationalist feeling to it.
Yeah, it's a bit like the BNP in certain senses. It came on the scene basically about 10 years ago. What happened is Pauline Hanson was originally a candidate for what they call the Liberal Coalition Party here in Queensland, in Ipswich in Queensland, and she wrote a letter to her local newspaper saying there's too much immigration to Australia and there's too many Asians and that coming in here and there ought to be some sort of checks on it. And she wrote the letter in an official capacity as a candidate for a sitting member. And after that, she got turfed out of the Liberal Party. And so she said, oh, stuff you, I'm running as an independent candidate. So she ran as an independent candidate and won the seat.
Oh, my.
And after that, all hell broke loose. So she, and that was a seat to the Commonwealth Government, to the Federal Parliament, House of Representatives. It wasn't a state parliament. And so she got up in Parliament House after the 1996 election and gave her maiden speech in Parliament. And they reckon the bloody switchboard of Parliament House nearly had a meltdown, all the people calling in supporting her, you know what I mean?
Oh, my.
She basically said multiculturalism's garbage. we don't need any more immigrants in here, and the White Australia policy was a good idea, and this government's selling the country out overseas, and half the country's been sold off to multinational corporations, and Australians haven't got any rights. All Aboriginals have got more rights than Australians, and bloody billions of dollars been given to this organisation called ATSIC, that's called the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders Commission. That was a sort of a governing body that sort of overseen Aboriginal matters, and they'd sort of got billions of dollars pumped in them over the years, but not a hell of a lot of it had gone to the Aboriginals. It's all gone to line the pockets of bloody Aboriginal bureaucrats, if you know what I mean. You know?
Oh, sure.
And various things like that, that's when she started getting kiboshed in the media, and so a few months later, she said, "Well, I'm setting up my own political party called the One Nation Party." And what happened is they had the 1997 Queensland election. They nearly won a third of the seats in the Queensland State Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And the mainstream parties just basically went ballistic. They went into meltdown, mate. They didn't know what day of the week it was, you know. Didn't know it was up or bloody down. They had crisis meetings and, you know. I mean, she basically changed the whole political landscape of Australia. I mean, that's basically what happened. Since she came on the scene, nothing has ever been the same. They got three or four senators in the Commonwealth Parliament in Canberra. They got three or four senators elected there, and a few others in the House of Representatives, which is a big effort for a minor party. And they got I think the 1998 was their swan song. They got about 2.5 million votes, I think, altogether, when all the votes were tallied up, first and second preference votes. They got nearly 2.5 million votes, and that's a hell of a lot out of a country of 20 million people, where there's probably only about 10 million people registered to vote, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's compulsory voting here, of course. Compulsory voting, you see.
Is that right?
Yeah. So they didn't know what to do. They were sort of like, she was basically calling the shots here for nearly 18 months, and they were like responding to it, you know what I mean? And, every time you turn on the TV or pick up a newspaper, there'd be something about her in it, usually on the front page, and it'd be unfavourable, but a lot of Aussies have got a fair bit of contempt for what they call intellectual elites, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And journalists in the bloody mainstream papers and that, and on the TV, so what they call, well, to coin a phrase, what they call up themselves, you know? There you are.
So they
didn't take hell. The more they bagged her, the more popular she got, if you see what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
and the end result of it was that there was a lot of internal divisions and stuff,
okay,
and personality clashes, and the end result was that they went by the wayside. But they had to change the bloody political she changed the political landscape, because what happened, this what you're talking about before, this Tampa incident, that was and Howard's reaction to it, that was all brought about because they were still behind the scenes there, you see what I mean? The One Nation Party was, they were basically dictating the terms of the political landscape, you see what I'm getting at.
Uh-huh.
And they actually brought in these things because before, anyone could lob in the country here, you could lob here on a bloody plane,
yeah,
a bloody Swaziland or some friggin' joint, chuck your passport away and claim you're a refugee, right? And what they brought in just about 5 or 6 years ago were these things called temporary visas, which means it's a 3-month visa. And you're not allowed to, because what these characters were doing, they were coming in here on a plane, chucking their passports away, claiming refugee status, and then going straight on the social security benefits. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because they had a pretty general social security system here. So they brought in this thing called a temporary bridging visa. It was a 3-month visa, which means they've got to renew their visa every 3 months, and they can't get social security benefits, they can't work, they can't, and all this sort of stuff. That was basically to sort of give them not so subtle hint to, you know, basically rack off, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go back to where you came from. And that was all brought in because of her. Because
so this party made some progress.
Oh, made shitloads of progress, shitloads. But because ever since then, Howard and other people, they got to watch their P's and Q's, if you know
yeah.
what I mean. They've got to be very careful. I mean, they don't spruik multiculturalism, sort of not even spoken about these days. I mean, it's still there,
yeah.
but it's not spruiked, if you know what I mean. I mean, it's not ballyhooed every 5 minutes by a bloody politician on the TV. You see what I mean?
You know, this example with Pauline Hanson may be one of the most effective movements in the whole English speaking world.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Do you think so,
well,
James?
Well, yeah.
Compare it to the utter failure of the United States to have a nationalist party. And you know, Britain does have a nationalist party, but they really haven't done anything. And maybe I'm being too harsh. What do you think, James? James? Oh, I guess James took off.
All right.
Wait, no. James, you're still there. He must have stepped away, but you know, I'm looking at this. I'm looking at what I'm. I didn't really know much about this Jimbo. And,
oh no, she was big news, mate. She was big news here for at least three or 4 years, best part of 4 years. And I'm only sort of vaguely sort of, well, Bruce. I'm not an expert on the PMP, of course. I mean, I know a few things about them, but I mean. I don't think they've won any seats in the bloody parliament there, have they? Like the House of Commons or nothing. They won a few minor sort of elections and that, you know.
See, there's something...
Council seats, but they haven't sort of gone into actually been elected to sort of government, if you know what I mean.
You know, I'd like to shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk to you a little bit about, because you have a creator icon... I believe on your forum avatar, and are you a creator?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm associated with me World Church of the Creator.
Yeah,
they're called the Creativity Movement. Yeah.
The Creativity Movement. I think this is a something I don't know a lot about, but I think this is a very interesting. There's always a lot of controversy about everything, but the thing that, tell me if I'm right, Jimbo, but This is not a church where there's like a Jesus Christ type of God, is there?
No, they don't believe in the Bible. No.
Yeah.
They don't. They think they believe Christianity is a Jewish hoax.
And let me when I asked you on the show and I found out you were I'll say a creator. That may not be the right term. If it's not right, tell me. But I looked up, and there were 16 points. And here, let me just read one of them. The guiding principle of all your actions should be what is best for the white race. Your first loyalty, this is point six, your first loyalty belongs to the white race. Point 8, destroy and banish all Jewish thought and influence from society and work hard to bring a white world as soon as possible. And there are some very interesting, you know, that's just three of the 16, and maybe they're not the best.
That's the 16 commandments,
man. The 16 commandments of creativity. Do you know other creators in Australia?
There's a few, yeah, they're spread out all over the country, but... I mean, there wouldn't be as many as in the U.S., of course, because, I mean, of course, we've got a much smaller population, but there are some, yeah, sure.
Well, I don't know any creators. If I'm using the wrong term, please let me know. But no, I don't know any. But I know there
well,
are.
You know Chain, don't you?
Yeah. Well, Chain. I do know him. I know. I don't know if he. Yeah. I don't know if one ever stops being a creator once you're a creator. I don't think he has stopped being a creator. It's a very interesting thing, and I think what do you like about the Church of the Creativity
Well, what it means to me is that it's basically for the white race and to assist white people in their daily lives and to assist their future generations of white people and. Basically, to redress the wrongs of the past that have been done to the white race, to put things right, you know? And it's basically to aid and assist the survival, expansion, and advancement of the white race.
And I think it says that in here as well in one of these doctrines, the points, 16 points. You know, earlier in this broadcast, before you came on, Jimbo, we were talking about with Todd about, you know, in the United States anyway. And this may not be true for Europe and Australia, but I firmly believe it's true here. The political, there is no way whites can get a political solution to our problems in this country. the political process is closed down, and it's just impossible here. Now, we can use the political system in certain ways to benefit ourselves, but the idea that we can have like a political party and win and influence the government is just numerically impossible. It can't happen now. And but I think this is part of something like creativity is part of the solution to our problem, because you know Todd talked about, you know, we face racial cleansing. Either they do it to us or we do it to them. But the difficult part is to get the consciousness of our race to understand that, to understand that we are being threatened, to understand that we are facing a disaster, a genocide. And I'm talking here mainly United States, and I think it's also true for Europe and maybe Australia too. But this creativity, I think, when I was looking over it for this show, I think really offers some positive way of gaining understanding for our race. And and this is so much better than this Christianity stuff in my mind. And I think it's a very interesting belief system.
It encompasses the entire worldview. I mean, creators have sort of got their own marriage ceremonies, christening ceremonies, funeral ceremonies and all that, you know what I mean? It's basically a replacement religion for the white race, because, the view held by a lot of them is that Christianity hasn't done a hell of a lot for us. I mean, here we are after 2,000 years of it, and we're just as worse off as we ever bloody were.
Oh, it's utterly failed.
If not worse.
Yeah.
I mean, it's done absolutely nothing for the white race. I mean, and in fact, many, like in the church, I was just reading something the other day on the web, a lot of the early popes, and in fact, many of the popes were Jews.
That may be, yeah.
It's nothing. I mean, whatever the origins of Christianity were, I mean, who knows? Who knows what was said or what was done? I mean, it's that long ago. I mean, all the original documents have probably been lost. I mean, we don't know what the hell was said.
Well, we can come up to present day, and I read. Did you fall off, Jimbo?
Not.
Okay. You know, I read the papers just like everything else, and in this country, we've got these Christian Zionists in this country that they're nuts for Israel, and they influence the whole country here, and they have political power, and they're just all over. Now let me bring James back in. I think James fell off. And I don't know if you have these kooks in your country or not, but they're very destructive here in this country. These Christian Zionists, and they're mainly I come from a Protestant background, but these Christian Zionists are mainly Protestants of various kinds, and they're very destructive. Yeah, I don't know. Are you still there, Jimbo?
Yeah.
Let me read.
Yeah, that's exactly right, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, what Klassen said was he was the founder of creativity, Benjamin Klassen. He said, look, if anyone...
So if someone wants to read about creativity, they can look up Ben Klassen?
Yeah, but there's his two major books, so Nature's Eternal Religion and The White Man's Bible.
Bible, yeah. I've read those two books, and I would recommend anyone who wants to do some research on the Church of Creativity, they're the main two books that you should read. Nature's Eternal Religion is a great book, but The White Man's Bible, you cannot put that thing down.
Let me repeat these for the listeners here. This is by two books by Ben Klassen, and it's called The White Man's Bible, and the other one is Nature's Eternal Religion.
Yep.
And now this is not, for people who are not aware, this is not like this is not like there's. First of all, there's no Judeo-Christian God in this religion, is there?
Not
anti-Jew.
Yeah, but also on the other end, it's not a. Is it a? Is there any polytheism kind of thing in it where there's
no,
like?
There's not. I don't believe in that stuff.
There's no supernatural kind of system in this religion,
no.
Is there?
Purely materialist.
In fact, if I can interrupt again, I mean, the main two books were Nietzsche's Determined Religion and White Man's Bible, but also they did Expanding Creativity, they did Building a Whiter, Brighter World, they've done Ben Klassen's Foundation, they've done Klassen Letters, they've done Rahoa, they've done A Revolution of Values Through Religion, On the Brink of a Bloody Racial War, which I need to read that one. Salubrious Living is a good one. That's How to Eat Correctly.
Really?
And it goes on and on, yep. And if I can give a quick plug here to the Creativity Bookstore, which is at RRT 1 Box 171, and that's in Gordon, Nebraska.
Gordon, Nebraska, huh?
69343. And you can get the Creativity books from there in the United States.
Now, James, have you encountered creators in Great Britain?
Oh, yeah, all the time, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, all the time.
Wow.
There's a lot more.
It's normally like, you know, within the white and nationalist circles, be it the British National Party, you'll have members who are members of the BNP or other organizations, but are also creators too.
I was asking you a question earlier, and I hate to jump back to a previous subject, but we were talking about, right before you dropped, your connection dropped, James, about this, and I don't want to spend a lot more time on this because we've talked about it a lot, but the question was about the One Nation Party, and it was for you, James.
Yeah.
When Jimbo told me about the change this party made in Australia, I knew nothing about it, and I said to you, James, do you think this is probably one of the most important the most successful movements of nationalist sentiment in the whole English speaking world?
Well, it was huge, and I would urge people to go on the internet and do a bit of a background check on this organization and what happened. Well, what happened towards the end was that probably B'nai B'rith, these filthy kikes in Australia, they were the ones who set their guns on Pauline Hanson. And do you know what? In Great Britain, there's a great tradition of selling fish and chips. It's a noble art in Great Britain of selling fish and chips. These people who do that are at the hierarchy of the white working class and are respected. Yet these filthy Jews turn their guns on Pauline Hanson because she used to own a fish and chip shop in Australia.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They did.
They made fun of her because her family owned a fish and chips business?
Exactly. And Alex said this, and I think I've said it in some of my programs. Jews go with the goyim to the lowest denominator, and they attack us at that lowest point as the Jews see us. You know, and they saw Pauline Hanson and their family saw fish and chips. So those B'nai B'rith of Australia, filthy Jews that they are, attacked her for being a fish and chip owner.
Yeah, oh
that's
my!
Exactly, that's exactly right. But she was she was quite a wealthy woman actually. She wasn't just she owned a farm as well. She owned a small farm, fairly.
Well, that makes it even worse because I think she is that got crooked, Jimbo. She started as a fish and chip person.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
So, see, the Jews never forget.
Well, yeah, well, they'll use anything. They'll use any kind of wedge. It's the divide and conquer And you know, they'll come after, you know, if it's money, if it's class or whatever it is, they'll exploit that wedge. And as long as they exist within our society, they'll use whatever lever they can.
And then they use the thing that they tried and successfully put David Duke in prison for tech stuff and what he got involved with. They attacked Pauline Hanson, and she went to prison, correct, Jimbo?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
it was somebody.
Look, I couldn't even begin to explain what it was all about. It's complicated. It was
they put the leader of this political party in prison?
That was a couple of years back, about 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. What it was about was...
Speak up, Jimbo.
It was about some alleged misrepresentation on an electoral roll or electoral accounting or something to do with ballot papers or something. Look, it's so bloody technical and so bloody complicated, I couldn't really, you know... I mean, it's not like it wasn't fraud or bloody robbery or drug dealing or something like that. It was just some sort of technical electoral matter to do with the federal election and some arcane sort of violation of the 50 volumes of the bloody electoral laws, mate. If you know what I mean.
Oh yeah.
And she and one of her sidekicks, his name was David. What was his last name? David, I can't remember. There was a fella called David Oldfield. He was one of them, and there was another fella called David something or other. I can't remember his name. But both of them went to prison, and they were there for about 6 or 7 months, and then they were let out on appeal. The appeal went to the Supreme Court, and Criminal Court of Appeal, and the conviction was squashed, and she was released, basically. But, yeah, and interestingly, the judge that sent her was a court.
Yeah, well, they had dragged her reputation through the mud first, right? Yeah.
Oh, look, there was hell to pay about it. They didn't get away with it that easily. I mean, even Howard had to get up on the TV and say, oh, I don't agree with her going to prison and all that, you know what I mean? And that's the frigging Prime Minister of the country, mate, you know? Even he had to get up because he knew how much electoral support she had, you see. So if he had to get up and say, oh, she got what she deserved or something like that, you know, he would have lost 1.5 million bloody votes or something in the next election, you know. So that's how, but they cooked up some arcane bloody charge against her. But
how long has this Howard been in power down there?
About 10 years.
God, you know what? You know, our system is fucked over here, but at least we can get rid of one of them after 8. You guys got to suffer through these people for 16 years.
Yeah, we're stuck with them, mate. We're stuck with them. We have a minister here called bloody Menzies, Robert Menzies. Pig Iron Bob, they used to call him, because he sold bloody Pig Iron to the Japs before World War II. He was in power for, 17 years or something, 18 years.
We've had the evil Margaret Thatcher for 16 years, and now we've had the
James, she was a conservative, though.
No, she was an evil. No.
I'm just joking.
Conservative, small c. Yeah. But she was not a nationalist, that's for sure. And
no.
She stole, as everyone knows, she stole our clothes in 1979, that evil woman. 16 years of her, and now we've had, coming up to 16 years, or getting close to, with Tony Blair and his ilk.
Yeah, well, that's what you got in countries under the Westminster system, common law countries.
Here's a question. In Great Britain, we have two parties for the most part, the Conservative Party and the Labour Party. In America, you have the Republican Party and you have the Democratic Party. In Australia, you have the Labour Party and
the Liberal National Party Coalition, or the Coalition Party.
So basically, in all our white lands, there is a two-party dictatorship going on.
Yeah. Two wings of the same bird of prey.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you look behind the financing of all these political organizations, as we all know, you don't have to dig too far to find out
Oh, you know, that's what I wanted to mention to Jimbo and, of course, you, James. I read an I used to blog for a site called MajorityRights.com, this is a long time ago, and I was reading on this blog that in Australia there was a, this is probably a report less than a year old now, that the Jewish interests there are funding all the political parties there, the major political parties there are at least 50% or more of their funding comes from Jewish sources. Did you hear about this story, Jimbo?
Yeah,
it's true, isn't it?
Most of the finance comes from, we say, big companies support them and the media, like Murdoch's media and that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say they're Jewish because there's a fellow here I've heard of called Frank Lowy.
And actually, I think this story came out of the Telegraph in the United Kingdom, and what was particularly deceitful about this this particular incident was that these Jewish interests, I can't believe this made it into the Telegraph, these Jewish interests, they were financing both parties that were running against each other. That is, these two political factions were, you know, on supposedly opposite sides of the political spectrum, and they were financing both sides.
Well, yeah, they back all the horses in the race.
Yeah.
So they're sure. The only party they never backed, as far as I know, is the One Nation Party. That was funded from contributions from supporters.
I think that's it. I think that was the name of it. Hold on, someone's sending me a chat message here. This is from James. Oh, okay. And so, yeah, I think that was it. And that's quite. Oh boy, the gall of that.
Yeah, well, that's their tactics. But I think the reason. One of the reasons she got so far is because they never really had anything on her. Pauline Hanson. Right?
Yeah.
As most politicians, as you probably know, are compromised, mate. They got something on them. And there was actually a woman here about 7-8 years ago, but this was in the New South Wales Parliament, called Franca Arena, A-R-E-N-A. She was a Labor Party sitting member, New South Wales State Parliament, and she was going to launch a major expose against bloody pedophiles in the Parliament, in the New South Wales Parliament. And they ended up getting rid of her. She got forced out of office, basically. But I wouldn't be surprised if half the bloody politicians in Western countries have got something like that in their background, because you know that's a sort of a thing, that's an allegation can be made against someone, and very hard to disprove, and can cause you all kinds of legal fuss and bother. So to have something like that over a politician, that's the ideal sort of blackmail, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
I have a theory. I don't have a theory. I'm perplexed why white people don't understand this this dictatorship that is our so-called democracies. These two parties, which for the most part, they, when one's in, one screws her up. Then another one comes in, they screws her up. Why don't our white people understand that these, in all our white lands, wherever they are, these two parties are the enemy of our people. They're killing our people. No matter which country we're in, the two parties, be socialists or conservatives or liberals or whatever you want to call them, Republicans or Democrats, those organizations, those political organizations, are killing our people. And why don't our people get it? Obviously because
Yeah, we know the answer, yeah.
Because of the Jewish media is not allowing them to get the answer.
It's kind of a rhetorical question, but I think what you're getting at is that we... people listening to the show tonight or the archives of the show, I'm sure some of you are still giving money to these parties, or your families are giving money to these parties, or your families are volunteering to help these parties. And do everything you can to stop that and to strangle these parties. And don't give them any more support. Don't vote for them. Don't do anything for these parties. And that's I think, kind of what you're getting at, James.
Yeah, all these parties are just like smoking, bad for your health, and bad for your racial health, too. And time's coming, as we all know, in Europe it's coming quicklier because the landmass is smaller and these people are invading our lands in Europe. White people are slowly waking up to this evil, insidious menace that's infecting our lands through immigration and the Jews behind it all in Europe and also in the United States and also in Australia, New Zealand. Do you know what? We need people to wake up to understand that we are under racial Armageddon here, and we need to come together and tell these rotunding dictatorship Jewish fed political hacks that their days are through and white people should come together and unite and free our lands from this menace of Jewish supremacism and ethnic suicide of our people.
All right. You know, I'm going to close the show out on that message, folks. And I want to thank all of our guests tonight. There's been quite a few. What we have at the end here now is Jimbo and James, and of course myself. And for everyone at Vanguard it's getting at 4 hours of this. For everyone at Vanguard Broadcasting, we want to thank you all.
You're listening to Vanguard Radio.